Welcome to Minocqua Movie Phone. For English, press 1. For Polish, press 2. Now playing at the Minocqua Megaplex.
Goodwill Trolling, starring Matt Damon as Kyle Knutson. A young man stumbles upon an old trolling rod at a local Goodwill, and with it, a destiny he never expected. Can Kyle become the greatest angler the Northwoods has ever known?
Minocqua Man, starring Jay Essie. Two ice fishermen accidentally find and defrost a radical, party-loving caveman frozen beneath Boom Lake. Chaos and comedy erupt as Minocqua Man adapts to modern life as he discovers White Claw, brats, and a passion for muskies. Rated NC-17.
The Hunger Games, Northwoods Edition, a riveting documentary exploring the feeding habits of curd queens in their natural habitat. Follow them as they migrate from tavern to supper club in search of Friday night fish fry and deep fried curds.
Todd and Dave's Excellent Adventure. Experience the laughter and sorrow as two of TV's top anglers ever to live crash the Northwoods.
Scare Clown, The Summoning. When a lightning bolt strikes the water tower, the Scare Clown awakens, and he's not here to juggle. Locals must band together to survive his twisted rampage. Decapitations, disembowelment, and balloons are just a few of the tricks up the Scare Clown's sleeve. Rated G.
What about Dr. Bob, starring Bill Murphy? Neurotic muskie angler Dr. Bob just wants a peaceful day on the water, but life and a boat full of stranded lingerie models have other plans. A laugh-out-loud muskie comedy about obsession and backlash.
There Will Be Blood and No Net. Follow the brutal journey of two stubborn bibs who refuse to use a net and destroy every fish they touch. A harrowing tale of pride, carnage, and reckless abandon.
The Wolf of Walsall. Meet Ernie Knutson, a high-octane live bait day trader with a nose for drama and a crippling addiction to Dr. Juice. Witness the rise and fall of the Northwoods' wildest bait baron.
To hear our list of feature films again, hit pound, followed by www. Then hit the number 6. Wait longer. Hit pound again, and then backspace.
Grab the family and come stuff your feed hole at the Minocqua Megaplex, home of the popcorn buffet and live bait.
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast, a Jay Bird.
Steve, what's happening?
I'm alive. Good. Are you alive?
Yes, sir.
Very good. Well, speaking of barely, yeah, I called you yesterday and it sounded like you were going to suck the bluing off of the Smith & Wesson again. What's up with that weather?
I was sleepy. Yeah, it's been chilly, Steve. Boy, I don't know. I just barely hit 60 today, but high of 49 on Friday.
That's tough.
Low 50s Saturday. Mm-hmm. Brutal cold weather lately. Rain and all that shit. Summer will be here eventually.
The mix. I'm telling you, I've had the eternal spring. Today was one of the first days when I went, it's hot. To be honest,
okay.
I mean it's kind of just now before I transition and get out of here and all that stuff. I mean I should be dodging hot water temps, you know, all that stuff, right? Where we're
southern stuff.
Forget about it. It's crazy. So That'll be around the corner here soon, but yes, this is wild and wacky stuff, Jay. Wild mm-hmm. and wacky, and it goes to show you when we're you don't pay attention to the calendar, don't fish the calendar, you know, don't go out there and it is summer. I will bucktail. This is why patterning so important, observation so important. You know, it's not June. You know, it's just not. It is a different ball game. I mean, we've got, you know, so many mixed reports. I was talking to Dr. Bob a couple days ago, you know, just touching base with him, you know, talking to all my boys.
Yeah.
Boy.
Yeah. How is Minnesota opener for the over there for those guys you talked to?
Bob's doing good, but it's mixed bag, and I think that's the lay of the land right now. You know, this lake versus that lake, and I mean, when you're getting hit with that kind of weather, what was the high the other day? It was like 44 or 45 with rain?
Upper 40s on Friday.
Wow, yeah. Upper 40s. Yeah. Much better brutal. Than low 40s. That's crazy.
Mm. It kind of is.
That'll just put the suck right back into it. So, what is it rebounding here?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it'll be rebounding all week. So, yeah, by next weekend, it's supposed to be 80. So,
well, and that's the thing. You got to adapt to overcome. I'm sure I'm sure Josh Krieger's Northwoods Fishing Report was like reading an obituary. You know, it's cold, it's wet, it is what it is. But you know, we'll maybe here in a second. Remind me. We'll hit.
There were some big fish caught up here.
Yeah,
and this last week I saw plenty of good reports from people. So
you can get on it. It's just you got to do some different things. Which, you know, cold fronts and those changes. I mean, you can't bucktail your way through everything. You know, and whether it be something as simple as transitioning to spinner baits to get them down a bit more or mixing things up, because what I'm hearing as far as fish getting caught has little to do with blades. The fish I'm hearing of are a lot of dive and rise fish on Titans. Obviously, you know, people catch on dive and rise. I'm hearing a ton of swim bait fish, just scuds of swim bait fish.
Yeah, me too, for sure.
You know, and that it is what it is. This year they want the swimmy baits. They want the swimmy baits. Anyway, the coming and goings, I think we are the same. We've leveled out here. It's the same way. Oh, no, something else did show up.
Hold on, there's new stuff coming in.
Just saw it here. Muskie Safari Jackhammer 2.
Yeah.
Electric Boogaloo.
That's a click and clack and noisy little thing. Let me tell you that. Well, it's got the mechanical clicker on the front blade assembly and twin blades in the back. So,
okay,
yeah.
So it's the same clicker deal he had in the front of the other. He's just put rear blade. It's more blades.
Yeah, there's double blades going on this thing. So
okay, and so is there a hook involved in this?
There's a hook. Yeah, it runs okay. Good. There's a video on there. There's you can hear hook. It and see it underwater. It looks great.
Oh. Anyway, yeah, that's cool. More blades, more fun. Yes, more blade, more fun.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You want more blade? I give you more blade.
No, we got the other one here.
What we got here? Angling Revolution, the 189.
You've heard of the Matrix? Well, this is the one.
Welcome to the Revolutiones.
Yeah, now this is another supposedly very noisy bucktail. It's got that. They've come up with their own Clevis design where you can interchange the blades. And it's pretty neat. Mm-hmm. And I was told to try that thing with a single strand leader. So they just came in. And it was winter on Friday. So we hope to get out on the water with that and get some underwater, especially with the audio. Because this thing's noisy the way it is. It's an 8.9 offset bucktail.
And okay, but this is
one hook, and
this is the Clevis assembly. I see they also have that independent Clevis assembly. So the deal with this bucktail is it has the snap. So you need snap ring pliers, and you can switch out blades and make your own combos. Correct?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. So for you bucktail makers out there, it's like, this is a lot better than using, you know, those clevises, those plastic clevises that work just fine for like walleye rig. But yeah, you start putting decent size or especially oversized musky blades on something like that. They don't have the strength to hold on to them.
No, not
plastic like that.
No.
Gotcha.
There's something to be said about the old bump and grind, if you will, of the, you've got the clevis on the shaft, bucktail shaft, and the making clevisy sounds. Now, so you have metal on metal, and that doesn't hurt you. Yeah, this is interesting because it kind of allows for some versatility there. You'll have to do, Jay, obviously we don't have a lot of the D script there or the deets on there, but you know, you get your little snap ring pliers out and you can change your blades anytime you like. That'll be a cool combo. Is there any, do you have any inclination of there, are there, because the weighting and different weights of bucktails, as far as your wire and your overall, your general weighting of that thing to prevent it, did it come with any kind of like, okay, these are the parameters, it's good with a 5 and a 6, or does it have to be balanced? You know what I'm saying? Or do you have any kind of rough parameters of what this bad boy can do?
Well, that specific bucktail
or just clevis
size. Yeah, is made for kind of like those mid-sized blades, like there it's got on there, 8s and 9s, not the mag. They've got a larger one for for the super big baits, but
The notorious 13-5 combo.
Right. they're out there. Did a double 13 underwater the other day.
Oh, God.
That's a big one. You should have seen Tom throwing that. He had like some kind of arm injury after trying to reel it in a couple times.
No, that's very
poor
cool.
Guy.
Very cool system. So keep it with your medium blades, your 8s. So obviously, I bet you can run 6s and 7s. And if it can hold a 9, she can probably hold a 10. You know, get the versatility up.
Yep.
There you go. That's cool.
We'll take a close look at that one soon. Yeah, it looks kind of neat. Yeah. I like
it. Yeah. It's a cool concept. You freaking dig into it and get some versatility. And you did the.
Right on.
You did that MM26 little shutter shad. There's some cool stuff. I think.
Yeah, they're sold out. Yeah, that's a cool bait.
I'm proud of everybody that sold out the Grim Reaper Trapper Keeper here. I love that thing. That thing is cool.
I'll have to get you one of those. Yeah, some more coming in.
I'll be stealing one. That's cool.
Yeah, you're coming up soon. That's true.
Yeah.
I've seen you pillage. It's not pretty.
It ain't pretty. It's like like taking a pig to the slop trough.
The pillager, is it? Okay.
Very similar.
Okay.
For those of you watching at home.
Watching at home.
Watching this. Well, I didn't say the podcast of those watching their old slop, watching the slop trough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you will. Anyway, enough of that nonsense. Goodness gracious, something wrong with me. We got to get to it. They piled them up this week, Jay. We got the Q's and the A's.
Right, we'll get done with that. I got some movies to watch after we're done here tonight.
Apparently.
After that intro, huh?
Wow. Juicy. No.
A couple of those I never heard of.
And we'll do it again next week. Livingston's going to do another, not the intro, that takes time. We'll do another round of Win Steve Stash. Jay, play the intro. Send in your questions to Win Steve's Stash. Stand in the dancers.
Excitement stuff. That's good.
All righty. There it is.
Here we go.
Greg, a.k.a. Dum Dum. Well, let's talk about self-confidence. He says, typically going into summertime, we have warming temps. I watch the water temps go from 70 to 59. Finding the warmest water at 64.7. My question is hold on, is that 70 to that? Yeah, it's whatever. Sorry.
Okay.
I can't zoom in that way. Every time I come to do the freaking podcast, I forget this thing's not touchscreen, Jay.
Ouch.
Finding the warmest water at 64.7. My question is there a if their metabolism is not increasing, would it be likely for them to not feed? Okay, so he's getting at that. With that crazy of a water temperature change, my focus was my first contact point off the basin, and that is where I found them, but they would not eat. I trolled, casting a jig. The only thing I didn't try was treble hooks and hand grenades. Anyway, spring's been crazy. He goes on. So, Greg, that is, it is what it is. So, you know, for the uninitiated there, he's done the smart thing. Water temps have dropped drastically, right? Bad. Muskies have evacuated the shallows and gone to deeper haunts that are stable. So he did the big brain thing there and did the right thing. Went to that first contact point. What we're meaning is that where you kind of have the merging of a structural element in the main basin, right? Found muskies. He's seeing them. They're there, right there. I'm looking at them, right? He does everything to try to catch them, and he doesn't catch them. That happens. That's it. There are times when they're just not going to eat. Okay. It's is there a fish that you might be able to catch if you were on the other end of the lake doing the exact same thing and they're the same circumstances that, you know, possibly. But there are times when fronts come through and shut fish down. Been there, done that more times than I care to say. That's part of the game. Now, you know, it's infuriating, but I've been on trips. I've talked about it in the past. I've been on trips where we're in Canada and it's awesome, and 4 days nothing happens. I've told the old trope. It's me and Joe Booker in the boat. All right, I think we got the basics covered here. Didn't see a fish for like 4 days. 5 days. It happened. The weather sucked. It was as bad can get. Right? It happens. Yeah. If you've done everything, what you do is you go, okay, I've done my homework. I've done all the right things. And it didn't happen. And you move on and you hope for a better day. Right? So if you're going to those links, it cold fronts, big changes, big shocking changes. Yes, there's always a chance, but there's not much of one sometimes, so don't beat yourself up. Brennan, I had a fish this morning on a Suic 9-inch red hot thruower. Had it boat side, decent fish for Minnesota Metro. Wouldn't eat it in the 8 and slipped away. Hit it cast back using a homemade original design kind of thing, darty diving rice thing. Once again, got a fish boat side and it wouldn't eat, slid off. So I slid off the spot and came back roughly 20 minutes later with a rip and wrap. Worked it really slow like a jerk bait. Saw the fish falling about 10 feet out and then it disappeared. Never saw it again. How can I change my attack to get these fish to bite? The weather's been cold, rainy, and just all around crappy since opener. Mm-hmm. I've been moving fish, but I've had several similar situations this week.
A lot of people have been commenting that I've talked to in the Northwoods lately that they've been getting a lot of fowls and fish are nipping at stuff. Mm-hmm. So yeah, go ahead, Steve.
Okay, well, yeah, thanks for interrupting.
You got it.
Thanks. You killed Buffalo. Now I got to start over. The whole show. I'm teasing.
But
he just goes on to say he's fishing afternoons after work, which leads me to believe I need to change something up. Any advice? Love the podcast. Meow. Keep it up. Once again, back to what I said to that. It happens. Now, what do I think's going on? And this is based on some experience I've had throughout the Southeast and you know, some of the lower Midwest and stuff I've been on throughout this spring. I have seen fish spawned out, and I have seen fish still spawning, and I have caught fish with eggs long after they should have spawned, and I have everywhere in between.
Mm-hmm.
I've yet to hear the definitive, it worked, it's over. I think it's mixed bag across the board because things were so mild and so up and down and so volatile. So there is no doubt it is 100% solid science that there are years that muskies just hold on and they reabsorb the eggs, right? And they act funky. They just do. There's year, like some of the fish will spawn, some of the fish won't spawn, right? And some of the fish are thinking about spawning and they're in and out of kind of spotting patterns and then they don't. It's mixed bag. I think a lot of people run into fish that are not spawned out. Or they, because they get weird right before they're going to spawn. When they're thinking about spawning, they're not there's like this pre-spawn window of feeding up, right? And then there's this period where you go, oh, crap, they won't do anything. I've seen it a million times. You know, coming into it and go, oh, man, they're doing that thing. Which is, you know, 48 hours before they're hammering things, right? Bam, bam, eating big baits, eating pounders, eating bulldogs, eating everything in between, right? And then they're like, nah. And they back it off, and they back it off. And then they just, it's kind of this weird point, I think, where they're like, okay, I'm good. I don't know if, and this is total conjecture, total guesstimation. I don't know if they want like a full belly or if they want anything in their system before they attempt to spawn, right? I don't know if anybody's ever flushed their stomach during spawn or what that looks like. Or, you know, do they take a break from eating right before said spawn? And I know it sounds nuts, and it's June. It's freaking mid-June. I've seen fish dropping eggs in June in the South still. Right?
Okay, that's crazy.
And, I mean, it happens. Not targeting them. I mean, I'll tell you flat out. Open water, four-footer today. Wide open water, right? Over 30 feet of water, out on pelagic bait fish, four-footer, headlock, in the boat. And I went, oh, what? And I'm freaking, we turn the thing loose, right? And I look down at the seat, and there's freaking eggs. It's June 15th. Water's 77. So, you tell me. That's my experience, and I'm freaking at the very bottom, warmest part of the habitat range.
Normal year, they're done spawning approximately when?
Forever ago. March. Months okay. Behind, right? And usually, I mean, I'm you know, walking away from the spawn freaking before you can even fish. Mm-hmm. So that was weird. And that happened today, like before the podcast. And, you know, take it back 2 months and I'm catching fish that look like they've been through the wood chipper because they spawned. Okay. Weird. And then it's just like I've got a video we're going to use for Livingston and Muskie Shop at some point where we double on Big Macs, right? Two fish on top art at the same time, right? Mm-hmm. It's like a 44-inch female and like a male. There's no doubt, right? Because you go and dude's throwing it. It's choppy. It's windy. We're just hucking and chucking. Bam, got one on, right? Go net that one. Bam, the lure goes over the same spot and another fish. Weird. So this, at least my experiences this year have been really weird. Where I'm just going, am I sure I'm running into? Am I seeing what I'm seeing? Right? And I got eggs in the boat on June 15th. So is that just where I'm at? It's kind of everywhere where I've been fishing throughout my region. And then I'm hearing these reports from guys up north going, I don't know. Right? Are they spawned out? So what dictates that? Was there an APB bulletin that went out through all muskies that said, hey, let's do something really weird this year? But it's one of those deals, dude. Like when they do weird shit, it seems like they all do weird shit. You know, it's like, I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Maybe can it'll be interesting to see what Canada says, right? Because I talked to Danny the other day. We're just, you know, just whatever, just gabbing after I got off the water. He got off the water. He's running some walleye or whatever. And was just, hey, what are you doing? Blah, 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 blah. And, you know, he's just seeing them cruise doing weird stuff. He's like, yeah, we're walleyeing. Here's one out and where it shouldn't be. Right? There's no reason that fish should be here right now. It should be way up shallow, way thinking about spawn. So we'll see. I don't know. I think it's a mixed bag. But back to Brennan's kind of question per se. What do? You get in the follow, right? And they won't eat anything. They won't even eat the little wrap, or they won't eat this. There's a question, is it timing, right? Did you come back on the fish too soon? You gave it 20 minutes. Should you have waited till sunset? That's a concern, right? He's saying he moved it on a dive and rise, and then he came back with another kind of smaller dive and rise, and he came back with a rattle trip. Not the worst idea I've seen, right? But is it a matter of engaging? Because what I'm picking up from this is, had it up, it stayed. First time around, it was a little hotter. Second time around, I'm taking this from an email, right? So, but what I'm saying is the devil between the details here, he said it kind of, let me check. Didn't eat and just slips away. So the first time, you know, he's saying it wouldn't eat and ate. So it sounds like you had diminishing returns. So the first time it was hotter, and then it was a little less hot, and then it stayed 10 feet back. Too much. Patience is a virtue. Now, that's tough to do. That's a tough thing to do. Is do I go back immediately? Is it the major? Is it minor? But what I'm trying to get at is this. Let's say that he's going after work and he's got minimal time, right? Before sunset or whatever. Look at your timing. Don't go back after an arbitrary 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, go back at your next event, the next change. Don't expect the fish to just magically eat because you gave it more time. It already gave you an answer, which was nay, right? So as long as you didn't screw anything up, blame the fish. That's a hard lesson to learn. Right?
Okay.
Don't go. If you come in, you're competent, and you're confident in your eight, and you make the immediate throwback, right? And you'll hear a lot of guys, and I am not the advocate. I'm not the biggest advocate on having a throwback rod ready to go, and that's probably because of the guide crap. I'm always fishing with somebody, right? But if you're fishing by yourself, have that second rod rigged up with an immediate follow-up ready to go. You don't have to clip it on. You don't have to do anything goofy with it. Have something to get that fish to eat as a cast back quickly. Then leave it alone. That's what I like to do, especially he's on that metro stuff where they're pretty demanding. Make sure your figure eights are perfect. Make sure that you're wide, engaging, you're keeping their attention. Make that cast back, and then don't come back until you have a reason to come back. Right? That parlays into, why do we even pay attention to moon phase, and does it work? Well, sometimes, but when it works, right? And we're looking at climactic changes, and we're looking at sunrise, sunset. So you go, okay, between now and when I have to get off the water, will there be a change?
Yeah, right.
Okay, let's say you don't have to get off till dark, right? Your wife's on a date with her boyfriend, and they gave you $15 for boat gas and said, don't come home.
These things happen,
especially in Jay's world. But, you know, you don't have to be home. You don't have to be out the water until it's dark. Okay. That is a definitive change that is going to happen. We know that. Now you kind of look, okay, is there a solar lunar change happening before then? Does my forecast say the clouds are rolling in or the clouds are rolling out? Or assess the situation. Stop for a second. And go, okay, is there anything going to happen between now and when I have to leave? Kind of look at what changes are going to take place, if any, and go back when that change is taking place. That's it.
Helps your odds. Yeah, for sure.
And there's always, there's always a fear of you know, somebody else will slide in and get them. Maybe not. I doubt it. But I want to make sure that I'm staged and ready to come in, you know, whether it be something as definitive as sunset or the minor started or the major, whatever. Plan it that way. I never do really good on giving them 10 minutes and coming back. Giving them 15 minutes, right? Smoke two and set the hook. He already told you no. Now you're just educating them.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you on that one.
Yeah, don't Don't educate them. Don't show them every trick you got. Because what if you came back with that whole? What if you came back with that whole main dive and rise thing you're talking about throwing in the email, and you went, "Eh, let me try this. Let me try that when I have a reason to be back." That's what I look at. And you didn't do anything wrong. It's just go, I'm just trying to help you plan your day. Look for a reason. That's when I make my return. Ben, we fish a lake in northern western Wisconsin that is designated a Class A muskie lake by the DNR. We've had very little luck raising fish in the lake. The challenge is the water is completely tannic and there's very little weed growth, aside from one patch of reeds. This lake is no more than 15 feet deep. Wondering what suggestions you would have for baits, presentations, overall strategy, etc. Okay. Super tannic. I'm wondering, I think I've been on this lake. I believe so. And I like, Jay, I got a little bit of taste for the dark stuff myself. What about you?
Dark water, big fish.
You like them dark?
What? I don't know. Sure.
Okay. I like it extra dark. Now, there's a few bodies of water up in your neck of the woods that are like, they are chocolate.
Oh, yeah.
And if you've never, something I'll tell you, if you're coming up, say you're coming up for the bash, you know, and there's a bunch of people doing it, where you come up to the Muskie Shot bash and go, oh, this is your one excuse to be in the North Woods for the year, whatever. Go check out, if you've never fished truly tannic water, just do a little research and check one out. It's kind of neat. It's a different environment. You get to see something different, right? Clear water, dime a dozen, you know. You know, we're not talking muddy. This is not muddy water. This is tannic water. It's not, there's not turbidity. It's tannins in the water. And it's like, Jay, it's like the lake has a giant tea bag in it.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it.
Tea bag.
Very dark. Lake. Very little, you know. It tampers light penetration. Weeds don't grow past 4 or 5 feet.
Teabag point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so
Lipton.
Lipton the teabag. Long story short, on a Class A, those are going to be, Jay, correct me and make sure I'm not stupid here. Class A is going to be trophy class, not a lot of population density, right?
Yeah, I think that's how they go with that. Yeah.
Hopefully not. Hopefully this is not like super action suck fast, right? And so, excuse me. Those tannic bodies of water are weird creatures in some capacity. So, something that I've found that people do incorrectly in these very tannic waters, right?
What's
that? Fish too deep. Light penetration is way different. So if you're a clear water guy and you're coming up, you go to the bash and get your check out, you have to readdress staging entirely because light penetration is so crucial in where and how muskies change and adapt, right? And how they feed, that the light penetration is just out of the question. I mean, I've been on, there's one body of water I'm fishing on. I think we're talking about a similar lake, if not the same lake, where you cannot see the head on your trolling motor, period. Right? You drop your rod in the water, you know, you go to your figure eight, you're not seeing the end of it. You just see you're not seeing the rod tip. This is dark, yeah. dark water.
Yeah.
That goes, yeah, it goes both ways. The fish are able to stage far higher in the water column. Now, it's warmer, but most of the time those fish are up way shallow. In the water column. I don't mean way shallow on the shoreline. I mean vertically, right? They stage higher vertically. So the old trope about the old Northwoods wisdom, oh, if it's a bad day, go to the darker water. That's because the fish don't retreat to the structural elements. They're not as shocked as much, right? The water temperatures are innately higher on tannic water, right? So the impact of a cold front is lessened across the board. What's one of the big things that happen in a cold front? Water temperatures fall. Check. The sky's clear and we have a ton of sun, which is high bright sun, dead flat calm, which means what? Light penetration. Right? Jay and I, there's some stuff on Highway 70. Jay and I have hit a million times where you go out there and you go, you know, we know we're going to catch one. There's a billion of them in here. And you could pretty much count on throwing top water every day, regardless of conditions, because the fish are high in the water column. Tannic water changes the proximity gap vertically. Now, what's the downside? The downside is it closes the proximity gap that you have to hit. So it raises them in the water column in general. They can operate higher in the water column. I personally believe that they want to operate higher in the water column, A, because of warmth, but also, too, they need a little bit of light to see in general, right? They don't have to have it, but it's helpful.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But the tannic, the turbid, or the tannins in the water, that is in the water column, right? This is stained water, if you will. It limits their vision. So we have the dynamic between caloric risk and caloric reward. So the kind of the trope, they can feel it, but they can't see it. Are they going to come raging with their hair on fire for it?
Hence proximity.
Yep. Now we're on a low population density lake that demands high proximity. So question, are you fishing under them? You need to think about that. Look at your bait staging vertically. Right? I've seen people do this, and one of the, I'm going to give you a fish finder lesson, Jay. Do you have your notepad out? Are you ready to take some notes?
Yeah, hit me. Go.
You ready?
Sure.
Sometimes people look at their fish finder and go, there's nothing on here. Everything's on the bottom. Right? And they look at, they can't find anything.
Mm-hmm.
At times, especially in tannic water, it's not because there's nothing on the bottom. It's because it's higher than you can see. You will look, because think how you're, Jay, during your scratch pad, draw a cone like the one they used to make you wear in the corner of the schoolhouse, right? Right? Draw a cone. That is the shape of your sonar signal, your downscan sonar. It's conical and it's down. So that beam is narrower at the top, unless you're parked over top of something, you don't see it. And at times, with depending on how deep the gun of your boat is, depending on how your setup is, you can't scan fish on downscan sonar that are in the top 2 feet of the water column a lot of times.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? So are you fishing under them? Like, if you go out there, I can't find anything. I'm not seeing anything. And I think about this all. If you're going out in the spring, unless conditions are gnarly, 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 and you're looking at your downscan and you're not seeing anything, sometimes they're higher than you're able to hit. You got too narrow of a beam at the top, where that's one nice thing about live imaging, where you can, oh crap, they're 2 feet down. Holy crap, I've been throwing under them all day long. So tannic water, I'm always thinking, adjust my parameters. They're going to be higher than I expect them to be no matter what, right? Now, we need to cover proximity, close the proximity gap. So fish higher in the water column and make sure that we're getting closer to the fish, because if they're not, you know, suicidal, hair on fire, ready to go, we don't have a highly active fish. We need to get in close proximity to ensure that we are able to engage with a fish that's negative or neutral. That's it. So make sure that you're covering water, saturation casting. Now, he says there's not a lot of weeds. Good. Thank God. That makes life even easier. Study structure. Weeds disperse, right? Study your structural maps. Dig into it and find the spot on spots, and you will find places that muskies habitually use to feed themselves. Weeds are a pain in the butt. If we could take weeds entirely out of muskie fishing, I'd be far happier. Right? I find them to be a nuisance. Muskies use them, therefore I contend with them, but it's just like a complicating factor when it's like, okay, I'm going to fish this point, and this point's good all winter long. It's good all spring long. Oh, now there's crap on it. Great. Wonderful. Didn't matter. Right? You know what I'm saying? Because
exactly.
It's not my take. It's the truth. Cover in conjunction with structure is an added benefit, but structure trumps cover, right, in the hierarchy. So if there were no weeds, it would be the same. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
Narrow your scope. really make sure that you're thinking about a game plan of where should these fish be structurally, right? What structural elements are in this body of water that look quote-unquote musky-ish? It's only 15 feet deep, right? So we're eliminating a ton of verticality out of this, right? They should typically be higher in the water column, so I can tailor my bait choices, and now I just need to find areas that consistently hold bait and look for structural points of interest in and around those zones, or vice versa, however you feel comfortable skinning the cat. What do you think, Jay? Other than just drink, if you would drink more of the water, you might become more dialed in. Become one.
And don't run your baits underneath them. Perfect opportunity to run twitch baits, mm-hmm. to run your jerk baits on, you know, certain days, to run high riding bucktails, to run slammer fatty minnow, classic example. Yeah. It's loud, it's got that internal rattle.
And you got float up.
Snap go, snap go, snap go, bam, mm-hmm. fish on, bingo.
Right.
You know, you're covering that 1-3.
Cover the 1-3. Your diving rise, your top water. I mean, if it's low density, truly low density, I mean, you know, it.
Yeah, all the more important to find that structural points, you know,
And when you do double down. Sean, hello, Steve. I want to change hook size on my 10-inch mid-tube harness and also burbot tube to a 7-0. Would you recommend the Mustad Triple Get 7-0 for this application? Okay, I know what that hook, the diameter of that hook is like shooting a muskie with a 38 special. That, you know, the Mustad Triple Grip, they're kind of this recurved hook. They're huge. That's a huge hook. And the shank, that is the only reason I know that hook off the top of my head, that is one of the few hooks you cannot cut the shank on with
Nipex.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that hook, actually, the actual tines of that hook are hard to cut. So I try to avoid those. If you want to go to a 7-0 on a tube, so he's wanting to do that with a burbot and a mid tube.
BKK 5-0.
BKK. That would be the ticket. It's a very nice hook, and it's a manageable hook shank. Like I said, that I'm not knocking the triple grip, but dang, is that that hook is ridiculous. If I was fishing for Megalodon, I might use those. The BKK 5-0, which is the equivalent gap of a 7-0, is a really, really nice hook, superbly sharp. What else? I mean, did they stop making that freaking Tyrant stuff, Jay? There's a Tyrant tackle hook that I really looked there for a minute, and I haven't seen them in a while. It's like a super wide gap 7-0, but it's not superbly over. It's not like it's not overly heavy duty. I'm talking about
they're not overly heavy duty.
But does exist though any longer?
I'm not sure if we can get them.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah, right. The BKKs kind of took the place of those, gotcha, because they are a short shank and they're, you know, super heavy, super sharp, super strong.
And I know there's
the kind of hook you need.
A quality. Well, there's a quality issue there too, which is a whole other conversation. So the BKK is premium, top of the line, chef's kiss. Mm-hmm. But like I said, that Mustad hook, man, I played with them. I mean, 7-8 years ago or 6 years, whenever, and they came back, and they're just big. I wouldn't recommend it just because and I say that because the tube thing, right? So don't get me wrong. So when they eat a Kraken or they eat a Red October or they eat a burbot or whatever, think about how they eat it. They go gulp, and tubes are nasty buggers to get hooks out of. Like tube fish, if you've caught a fish on a tube, you know what I'm talking about. They're nasty at times. They just, they will inhale them. That's one of my biggest reasons, or one of my initial thoughts with the Kraken, right? Because even with my Krakens, I actually will take the middle hook off. I'll go with like a 7-0 Mustad or standard, like the standard hook that's on like pretty much every bucktail, that standard Mustad on the front. Take the middle hook off and then like run a 7 on the back. I'm comfortable with that. If I'm fishing in a smaller fish fishery, I'll run the 3, right? But my fear is like if I've got 3 hooks on that bad boy, 3 trebles, because the Kraken has more hook points than the other tube options, right? If you're rocking like 3 big hooks on there, how do they eat it? Now I'm dealing with 9 points possibly, right?
Yeah. Be a mess.
Yeah, it's a mess. So just be cognizant of that. But I would recommend shying away from something that's difficult from a cutting standpoint when dealing with any tube style bait. That's all I'm getting at. You know, if you were going to maybe use it as a grappling hook to climb the walls of a Chinese castle, that hook might be appropriate. It won't let you down, but it's a little there. Yeah. Is that who hasn't? That's why I said it, Jay. It's so common.
Right. And it's not easy.
No.
No. It's a lot of work.
For the week.
Yeah.
Todd, how many hot dogs will Jay eat the Husky soup?
Okay. What? Say it again. Huh? What?
Dang.
Man's losing it. He's losing his cool.
I'm laughing. Todd says.
One or two guys out there tops.
Todd says, how many hot dogs will Jay eat at the Muskie Shop Bash? Hot dog eating Catalina wine mixer contest.
Oh, bingo.
Also, will soy dogs be an option? No. No soy dogs. But Jay will drink an entire bottle of soy sauce. Brett, great podcast. I fish a small pressured lake in southeast Wisco mainly. I'm a weekend guy. I get follows on the Titan Junior full-size Titan, but can't seem to get them to commit. In reality, it's hard to get them to finish on any presentation on this lake, but the Titan has become a confidence bait for me since I see the most fish using them. Just don't get that many bites. Do you think color would make a difference? Cadence. With the lake being clear, you get a great visibility and see the follows halfway back to the boat. So they're on it and then just turn off near the boat. Lazy follow. We've all been there. Or they just drift through. What more can a guy do in the last 15 to 20 feet to seal the deal? Love the podcast. Oh, he says love Livingston Products too. Thank you, Brett. Livingston Products, love you too. I'm Brett. I'm Jesus. I wrote this email. Thank you. No. Thank you. He's a real person, but thanks for that. So.
Yeah, in southeast Wisconsin. Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a handful of popular musky lakes that have great fisheries, but high pressure. They're tough.
So you have the combo, high pressure, clear water, right? And they're breaking off far out. So what I would look at is you know, adding something in there. Don't forget the figure eight, don't get me wrong, but concentrate on doing something highly erratic or unexpected before that point that they're breaking off, right? You know when this is going to happen. You know when muskies are kind of, that's the point where you see this happening continually. You've seen it enough. You're sick of it. So if you don't see another one, who cares? Let's focus on doing something that might trigger a strike in that zone, right? So one thing that can be helpful, and I had this conversation on the boat this week. I don't make long casts when I don't have to make long casts, but I also don't make short casts when that's not appropriate. You might be able to put more fish in the boat by making longer casts in this scenario, right? If they're boat shy, give yourself more time before they get to the boat, which is the Minnesota heave-ho, right? Launching that sucker as far as you can so the boat's out of the equation for as long as possible, right? So think about adding casting distance if possible, things that do that for you, right? Is you can gain a little bit of distance with line diameter. I'm not a big guy. I always stick with 80, but if I have to, if I need distance, you can get more distance, drop it down to that 65-55, right? Braid. This is an extreme case. I don't recommend it all the time, but if you're clear water fish and they're being pesky, dropping back in diameter and strength, right? That's going to gain you some distance. Longer rod, right? And a reel like that Daiwa TW. And then you go, and again, I'm not, how often do you hear me talk about casting distance and making these long bombs, Jay? It's not something most people have to deal with, but
no, right, right.
You can help yourself if that's something you got to do, like that Lexa TW with the T-wing on it. There's less friction there. You do pick up distance, right? I've A-beat them versus my tranks, I've got every freaking reel there is. And you go, okay, well, I definitely get some more distance there, right? So that can be helpful in that scenario if you got to create distance. But I think the most important thing to do is look at your cast from the standpoint of, this is where I assume I'm engaging fish at. Let's say he's throwing at the deep weed edge there, right? And he's making contact with fish off the deep weed edge, and they're coming in 15 to 20 feet off the boat. They're breaking off. So we need to back things off, and we need to figure out what we're going to do after the point of engagement. So we've engaged with fish in what we can assume is the zone of engagement, Jay, right? Now we have the transition to open water. Now we have a place where we need to trigger strike before we reach that fourth component of the cast, which is the boat side, right?
Mm-hmm.
So once you know, you should feel confident that a fish has moved off of this area, that's when you need to get highly erratic or do something different. And you got to play with that each and every time. So let's say you're doing a Titan thing, right?
Yeah, yep, yep. Go ahead.
I might dive and rise that thing out and I go, okay, this is typical where I think where they're coming from. All right. So think about it this way. If one is behind me right now, during this cast, you don't see him, you don't have live imaging, you don't know, but this is how you have to old school it. This is where they should be coming from. If there's one on this cast, he's now behind me. Now we're transitioning to this. I better do something different, which is like with a Titan, I might just give it a big rip and just like stop doing anything and just let it float up just where it's just below the surface, you know, 6 inches down, rip it down again, right? Or you can pop it, or you can pop it in place and let it float backwards. That's the one thing about I don't talk about the Titan too terribly much, but the Titan it floats backwards towards them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Back out of a place. So do that on slack line. Try not to create as much forward momentum, right? Play with that bait. If it's your confidence bait, take that bait in clear water and go, what can I do to this bait? How can I manipulate the rod where this bait does goofy stuff, but it's not advancing? And the Titan will do it, right? Rip it down and then pop it under slack line, let it bounce in place where it's not really advancing that much. And you go, okay, I can assume I've contacted a fish. Now I'm into the open water section. I better mix it up right then and there. Rip it down, rip it up, let it float up, twitch it, pop, 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 until you find the recipe for the day that's going to trigger that strike.
Yeah, I definitely try speeding up. That second half of the cast, if he came in and he's interested, and all of a sudden the thing starts accelerating and starts getting wild, pop, 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 that might do it. If you're pulses. Perpendicular casting all day too, and then they're breaking off.
That's another.
Perpendicular.
You just hit something that could be helpful here. By the way, so you're dealing with make sure I'm assuming I know what lake he's on here.
Southeast Wisconsin.
Okay. So I'm looking here. Just scanning the email real quick. Parallel those edges, right? Everybody casts into them and draws them out. Parallel them. Make you a big, long bomb cast on those outside edges or these outside weed edges and work across them. Instead of casting into them, they assume. And I've seen this, and it's something, I'm glad you said that because we probably wouldn't have touched on. Musky baits go in and out to deep water. natural prey sometimes runs in. You can beat pressure.
Yeah, then yeah, right. Natural bait likes to flee back into cover. So,
right.
Yeah.
You can by mixing up the direction that you're fishing, you can do something that 99% of people are not doing there if it's heavily pressured.
Hmm.
So try that. That's going to be try that first thing first, right? First and foremost, try that stuff. Now, something I've done well on is you know, getting that in and like say you try to bring it in to into the thick stuff and then pause it and bang it around on edges and stuff. If you want to make this cast from the open water into the cover or structure, you know, mix it up there in the midst of it. But yeah, that's a good stuff. What we got? My goodness, there's so many, Jay.
Okay.
Fun. Jay stopped at the shop. Some might know him. Park Falls. Semi-famous. I'll make sure. Hold on. Make sure I can read this.
Make sure you can read it. Okay.
Anyway, this guy stopped at a store, right? Not the muskie shop, but anything. He said he ran into a guy, said they were finding muskies in the muck last weekend. Can you explain exactly what muck is, where it might be, and why they might be up in it? Jay, he said Jay, so why would a muskie in Wisconsin be in the muck? What is the muck, and what are they doing in the muck?
The muck.
Muck.
He's talking about mud flats?
Muck.
Well, I don't know. Muck. Some kind of bugs coming up, probably.
When I think muck, I think JSE. Now, when people say muck, I'm thinking muddy, flat stuff, right? Kind of a catch-all for up in the mud, right? You know, that's where I'm at. Yeah, it's... And look, muck just slang for very bad quality, right? But when I hear anglers talk about up in the muck, it's the muddy stuff. It's kind of like trudge around up in the weeds and the mud and the nastiness. And so that's going to be your shoreline. That's going to be on your soft bottom, right? So any mucky, quote-unquote, area, it's not going to be gravel. It's not going to be sand. It's going to be soil composition, muddy bottom. That's what you're looking at. What do you think?
Well, dark bottom, you know, it's going to heat up faster. So maybe it was, you know, they were dealing with cold water. He was in the Northwoods and, you know, he had some spawning fish coming in and the muskies were after him. So because of that, dark bottom areas are going to obviously absorb mm-hmm. sunlight and it's
good.
Shallow. So, you know, turn up the heat, baby.
Doug, what's your go-to jerk length collar? You can only bring one. When he means jerk, is he thinking jerk? What are we thinking? There's Steve here. Let's ask him. Steve Herbeck, you're on the podcast. Yeah, hold on. I'll just merge you. You're on it now. Jay, are you there?
What's up?
Hey, Steve. Thanks for... folks, this is what happens. What guy just asked a question. What do you define as muck, Herbeck? What is the muck?
The what?
Muck, M-U-C-K, not the other one, muck with a M.
Yeah? What do you mean? What do I define it in?
What is muck?
What the fuck?
I said, the guy asked, he said he heard some guy saying they're up in the muck, right? And in my brain, that's just muddy.
Well, that's probably, I don't know, up in the muck. Most of the, what I would think you were referring to is the loon shit, the brake line, you know, from rock to mud,
mm-hmm.
you know, on the second brake line, you know, that's what I refer to. Unless you're talking bass and stuff like that, or maybe some lakes with dark water and lily pads, you know, stuff like that, kind of shallow, dark water stuff. You find some, you know, you find the muck up there in them shallow lily pads and weeds and stuff like that. But, you know, and that can happen on, you know, when it's warming up fast and stuff like that, mostly around spawning time or just shortly after when they want warm water, you know,
mm-hmm.
cruising around and stuff, you know.
Nice.
I wouldn't say it's good spawning area or nothing. You know, it's just it warms up fast and brings in bait fish and stuff like that. It's not a pattern I fish a lot, but
right.
but it can be productive in some lakes, you know.
Cool. Well, since you're here, I'll read you one question, and this guy can get his answer from the man, the myth, the legend, Steve Herbert. Jason says, love the podcast. I'm a trucker from Eastern Iowa. My question is about crankbait collars, more specifically shallow cranks. I vacation in early August at Lake Winnegabashkamish, Big Winnie, I can't pronounce anything, in central Minnesota.
Winnegabashkamish.
What did you call me?
I said it's called Lake Winnegabashkamish.
I thought you cursed me in Russian. The fish is known for walleye and perch. They're Cisco, but I'm not sure the population because I've never heard of them. Blah, 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 blah. He says there's a bluegill forage base. What kind of color patterns are you thinking about on Big Winnie for smaller crankbaits? What's your thoughts,
well,
Herbie?
The lake is world renowned for its perch fishing. So, you know, if he's fishing the shallows and stuff like that, there's always small perch around. And yeah, there's small bluegills, but you know, perch is a universal forage anywhere. Mm-hmm. And Lake Winnegabashkamish is world renowned for its perch fishing through the ice and stuff like that. So, I mean, I would kind of target fire tiger and perch and stuff like that, perch baits, mm-hmm. perchy colored baits, and things like that myself.
What about that? I mean, because if he's talking about those, we got a perch base, like that short tail BB perch Magnus or something like that.
I'll tell you. I love that short tail on that bait.
It looks dumb. It looks weird, but it works like a sun.
Oh, but it doesn't look weird in the water.
Uh-uh. It looks like a panfish.
It rocks and rolls. It's a funny type of paddle tail. It's most paddle tails in the past I've used when things got on the tougher side, like the bucktail bite really dropped off.
Mm-hmm.
So then kind of, you know, swimming paddle tails and stuff would kind of pick up and catch fish but when the bucktail bite was turned off. Well, this is a very aggressive tail. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a bait that you use when the bucktail bite is on or yep. the fish are aggressive and you want to cover ground because it's fairly heavy. I mean, even with the weight out, you can keep it up because of the big tail. But you can drop it down if you're 16, 18, 20 feet, too. I mean, it's a pretty versatile bait. And there's nothing wrong with the long tail. I just happened to get it and start being able to use it when typically smaller baits and the type of lakes I was fishing had smaller. Like, I haven't had a chance to use it up on Eagle or up on Trout Lake in northern Wisconsin and stuff like that where the forage is big. So I really like that small profile, and it's going to be its fourth full season, so mm-hmm. it's going to be interesting to see what happens with it. And I think, you know, like guys on Green Bay, if they use that bait, that perch colored bait, or that what's the real hot perchy color? What's that
Wasteland.
Called? Yeah, Wasteland. I think, you know, the way they like them hot colors and stuff like that, I believe there's going to be some big fish if guys use it on Green Bay.
Absolutely. Here, answer one more because you're good at this, and me and Jay are lazy now. Austin, this might be sad to say, but I've listened to every single one of your podcasts. You guys are one of the few people in fishing. Thank you for the compliments. He says we don't get enough credit. I've always thought that too. I'm teasing. But he gushes. I appreciate it. Last year, I caught my biggest muskie solo fishing. Shortly after watching the ultimate netting video, I feel like the video was the main reason I caught it. Well, thank you. Blah, 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 blah. Let me go for it. I appreciate the compliments. We get them. His question is, what is the best way to approach a chain of lakes? I fish the Manitouish chain. The chain has many different water clarity levels, clear, tannic, muddy, etc. It also has differences in water depth as well. I feel like I overcomplicate things by picking which lakes to fish on the chain. I just want to pick your brains on how to choose a certain lake for certain scenarios. So, Steve, you've fished chains. You've probably fished Manny chain. You fished them all.
Yeah.
How do you determine what lake on a chain to fish that day?
Well, a lot of it has to do with the time of the year. I mean, you got your shallow lakes like Wild Rice and the other shallow lakes there, you know, that are good in the spring, and then the channels in between the lakes, when they start drawing down the lake in the fall, those channels draw in current and ciscos and stuff. You know, it's kind of more the time of the year. You know, you got Manychain, and I mean, you got the Manitouish. You got, you know, little Star, which is gin clear. The only real gin clear, although Clear Lake can be, it turns greener later in the summer, but it can be fairly clear too. But most of the lakes got a stain to them, which makes for, you know, pretty good fishing, you know, under higher pressure. You know, there's a lot of boating pressure during the weekends on the Manchester Stain. That's the only thing. But there's a great population of fish. What I do when I fish is I start, you know, lake close from boat landing.
You're breaking up a little bit there.
I said, when I fish it, I usually start down a lake close from boat landing. And pick 4 or 5 good kind of signal spots. You know, if I don't see something going on, I move on to the next lake, or I move into one of the smaller lakes, or I move over into the clouds up. I really like Little Star because it's clear and there's some big fish in there. So, you know, it's got so much that you can't really say, unless you get a tip, that, wow, you know, Island Lake is hotter than hell right now. You know, you get tips from the local sports shop or from the guides and stuff in the area, stuff like that. But other than that, you know, I mean, all the lakes got good populations of them, and I've used it according to the weather and the time of the year as far as picking what lakes I fish. I think you can overcomplicate it by, you know, trying to figure out which lake to be on. Unless you got a tip or you've been fishing it and have time on the water on it, and you got those kind of windows that, you know, occur, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. At certain times of the year. And it's a tough one. I mean, that chain's got a lot of water. It's got a lot of different kinds of lakes. It's very interesting to fish. You know, it's got a lot of challenge to it, but yet it's always got something to keep your mind working and whirling. You know what? It's a neat chain.
Nice. You're on a roll. One more. Robbie, any tips to improve hookups with the new Magnus from Livingston? The Perch Magnus was bad. The Perch Magnus was hot on Lake St. Clair opener this weekend. Had two fish on briefly, but neither stayed hooked. Both fish were on for 5 to 10 seconds before they came off.
I don't think it has anything to do with the hooking ability of the Magnus bait, because quite honestly, I think the hooks are, well, like if I change to the small tail, I got to change the back hook of the tangle. Okay, well, they got big hooks.
Well, he says,
is he sharpening his hooks?
Well, he says, let me finish the question. He says, based on teeth marks, the first one headshot the Magnus, and there are teeth marks on the base of the tail, so that's a big fish. The second was hit it directly from above and shredded from the top. Wondering, is there anything I can do, or is it bad luck? I mean, to me, it's like...
It's bad luck, and it's the way the fish are biting.
And the way you're setting, yeah.
And it's kind of the way... A lot of times, it's the way the fish are biting, you know? They're kind of an off bite, and they nip it, you know? They grab it, shake it quick, get it off. They don't inhale it, you know? They don't really... try and really kill it, you know, and that happens a lot early in the season, you know, and I wouldn't say there's any problem. I wouldn't be putting more hooks on it or anything like that. It's got plenty of hooks.
Yeah, set hard.
I'd make sure my hooks are razor sharp. I'd try to pay more attention to maybe not dropping the bait as much, you know, maybe keep a little bit more straight line retrieve, and or if you are dropping it, pick up the line fairly fast, because it seems to me like he just had some bad luck and the way the, and also the way the fish are just taking the bait.
Yeah. Well, it's one of these things too, is like, you know, he's got them for 5 to 10 seconds. He says he's feeling the fish, hit them hard. And I think, I think a lot of times is like, people think they're hitting them hard and they don't hit them hard. Hit them hard. You're not going to hurt them. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes too, when the fish are acting like that, it's on and off so fast that you, you never really even, you never really even got a hook set on, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. That's, well, heck, I didn't know you were calling, but thanks for the answers here anyway. Well, I got to talk. Right. I got to talk to Herbeck here, Jay Bird.
Yes,
say good night.
Night, guys. Thank you,
Steve Herbeck. Say good night.
Good night, fellas.
Good night, big boy. Later.
Bye bye.
And a local tribe is using a new way of keeping birds away from a water tower. They're introducing the Scare Clown, standing atop the Mole Lake Ojibwe's water tower in Forest County. And by the way, the Utility and Public Works Department kindly requests that the community refrain from disturbing the clown situated atop the water tower. They urge everyone not to shoot at him, as well as doing so could result in damage to the water tower itself. The Scare Clown has been placed there specifically to deter birds from causing any disturbances.
The scare clown.